The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 12:49 a.m., April 25th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
She was warned.
Resist!
Ask yourself, who is really the friend of women and the LB and LGBT community?
Grab him by the pussy.
Donald Trump.
She was given an explanation.
For Hillary Clinton with her words.
Can't win what you don't
I will tell you. For. Who the better friend is. And someday, I believe that is an
honor.
I don't
think so.
Build that wall.
We need your help.
Build that wall. Build that wall.
Elections matter. Voting matters. You can't take anything for granted. You can't sit this one out.
You haven't done the pussy.
It's up to you.
Nevertheless, she persisted.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for streaming, downloading, or listening to the live stream of K-Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly.
Resist!
I am sorry I didn't get an episode out on Friday. Between the state Senate campaign I'm working for, my actual mundane everyday duties and job, and mostly because of Coachella, I didn't have time. I spent 3 days in the desert listening to live music and dodging bros and their female counterparts. We'll call them brosettes.
Oh my god.
It, as always, was a blast. Plenty of performers went political, but most didn't this year. The strangest part was being 90% unplugged from the news for 3 whole days. I wouldn't have heard about it if Donald had ran off to Russia to marry Putin's gay son.
Oh yeah.
Which would have been crazy as I don't even know if Putin has a son, let alone a gay one who would actually sleep with Donald. Ugh, I apologize. That cat is still in heat and still making her noise. I mean, really, who would voluntarily sleep with Donald? I guess Stormy Daniels did, but even she said she didn't want to. After all, Putin's son could probably have a choice of any corrupt obese man to marry. But it was a nice break. A really nice break. And it seems that I actually didn't miss much. A lot happened, but, more of the same. Corruption, 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 yada yada, idiot president, yada, fascism.
Fake news.
So, here's the deal. I'm gonna be somewhat inconsistent on what days my show drops from time to time. For a while, at least. My priority right now is going to be the campaign. We are working hard to get the word out by the June 5th primary. Oh, God. June 5th. That's, tomorrow. So I'm going to be a little inconsistent about what days of the week my show drops, so keep an eye on your feed. All right, guys, let's talk politics, because after all, that's why we're here. And while the political world stopped turning for me for 3 days, it sure as hell didn't in Washington, and definitely not in the rest of America.
People be up to shenanigans.
This week in Congress.
Looking pretty swampy.
The House started its week Tuesday by considering 6 bills, including legislation to prohibit U.S. assistance from being used to rebuild parts of Syria controlled by the Assad regime. It will spend Wednesday through Friday considering bills to reauthorize the FAA and reform disaster recovery assistance and keep the Columbia River dams operating through 2020.
Seems necessary.
And update provisions of U.S. copyright law regarding music licensing. The Senate took a procedural vote on Monday to limit debate on the nomination on the nightmare that is Stuart Kyle Duncan to be circuit judge for the 5th Court. And on Tuesday, on basically a party line vote, 47-50, they confirmed him. And every single one of those senators who voted for this man deserves to have their spouses leave them for a member of the same sex.
Trump administration, from day one, has made attacking basic civil liberties a guiding principle of the policies it supports, including its judicial nominees. It is inexcusably seeking to turn back the clock on the progress that we've made. And we fought back hard against these arcane and irrational policies, but President Trump's attempts to stack our courts with extremist judges may in the end have the most long-lasting and devastating impact on our nation.
The Human Rights Campaign, love them, share them, and donate, have provided a rundown of exactly what a bigoted tool this man that has now been seated to a lifetime appointment is. Quote, Duncan's record on anti-LGBTQ advocacy is alarming. He represented the Gloucester County School Board in their case against Gavin Grimm, the transgender high school student whose restroom access was restricted based on his transgender status. He advocated on behalf of Louisiana in the state's bid to uphold its same-sex marriage ban and wrote an amicus brief for Louisiana and 14 other states arguing their same-sex marriage bans did not undermine the decision in U.S. v. Windsor, the landmark Supreme Court case that required the federal government to recognize the marriages of same-sex couples. He also argued that a couple married in New York could not have their names added to the birth certificate of a child they adopted in Louisiana because the state did not recognize the same-sex marriages at the time, and its adoption statute does not allow unmarried couples to adopt. Unquote. Duncan also ramrodded that Hobby Lobby case that got the craft supply empire a religious exemption from the contraception mandate under the Affordable Care Act. He also was on the losing side of the Obergefell decision on marriage equality. Duncan is a right-wing ideologue who has devoted his legal career to undermining civil and constitutional rights in America. He has aggressively advanced a radical personal agenda to set back LGBTQ rights, voting rights, immigrant rights, women's reproductive freedom, and criminal justice progress. Duncan aggressively defended North Carolina's massive voter suppression law passed in 2013 in the wake of the Supreme Court's Shelby v. Holder decision, which struck down the Voting Rights Act provision that required jurisdictions like North Carolina, with a history of
racism,
voter discrimination, to pre-clear voting changes with the U.S. Department of Justice. North Carolina's law imposed one of those burdensome photo ID requirements. It eliminated same-day voter registration and voting and reduced the availability of early voting. It also prohibited the counting of out-of-precinct voting. This law was struck down last year by the Fourth Circuit, which concluded that the law had been passed with discriminatory intent. The Fourth Circuit stated that the provisions of the law targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. And Mr. Duncan scolded the Fourth Circuit, writing that, quote, the notion that these election laws are reminiscent of the era of Jim Crow is ludicrous. Evidently, the Fourth Circuit's eyes, where North Carolina is concerned, is always 1965. The decision insults the people of North Carolina and their elected representatives by convicting them of abject racism, unquote. He also defended Texas's discriminatory photo ID law, and so on. On immigrant rights, Duncan filed an amicus brief challenging the legality of deferred action for parents of Americans and lawful permanent residents, DAPA. That executive order granted legal status for nearly 4 million undocumented immigrant parents whose children are either U.S. citizens or residents. He called it a, quote, lawless departure from the nation's duly enacted immigration laws. DAPA would exacerbate the very safety problems Congress hoped to prevent. Combined with the policies of numerous sanctuary cities on the detention of criminal aliens, DAPA's implementation would greatly increase the risk of unauthorized immigrants committing serious crimes against American citizens and other lawful residents.
Racism.
Unquote. DAPA, of course, remains blocked by a federal district court and was never fully implemented. On criminal justice, Duncan filed numerous Supreme Court briefs to try to limit the rights of criminal defendants. He argued against retroactive application of the Miller v. Alabama rule, which prohibited life sentences without parole for children. And as far as women's reproductive freedom goes, Duncan repeatedly and aggressively sought to diminish access to women's health care and reproductive freedom. In Stoemans v. Weissman, Duncan filed an amicus brief arguing that Catholic pharmacists should not have to follow Washington state law that requires pharmacists to fill contraception prescriptions. And Whole Woman's Health v. Hollerstedt, Duncan filed an amicus brief in support of the draconian Texas law, struck down by the Supreme Court in 2016, that would have required any physician performing an abortion to have admitting privileges at a frickin' hospital within 30 miles of where the abortion was performed, and also would have required that all abortion clinics comply with standards for ambulatory surgical centers, which is just a load of BS. Duncan wrote incorrectly that, quote, settled law requires deference to state judgments about the best means of protecting the health and safety of their citizens, unquote. Look, pick an issue. This guy's crap on it. And yeah, no, he doesn't talk like that. But I feel like all these jackasses should sound like the idiot Neanderthals that they are. So he's a nightmare. And now he has a lifetime appointment. Here's Democratic Senator Blumenthal on his confirmation.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm here to oppose the nomination of Kyle Duncan to be a judge on the United States Circuit Court for the Fifth Circuit, the Court of Appeals for that circuit and every other in our country is supremely important to people, not only who live within its direct jurisdiction, but all the people of our country. Courts of appeals make decisions that are binding on the district courts in that jurisdiction, but also have impact on other judges and courts throughout the country at every level.
This is why we have no choice but to take back the Senate. This country needs to stop the bleeding. Speaking of stopping the bleeding, as y'all probably know, there was a special election in Arizona to replace yet another Republican who had to leave office with his tail between its smarmy legs due to quote-unquote sexual impropriety. And Republican Debbie Lasco won the House special election Tuesday. But the thing is, Lasco only had 53% of the vote in the Associated Press called the race an hour after the polls closed, with over 155,000 early votes tallied. So Democrat Hyrald Tepurny had 47% of the vote. This single-digit win in a district that Donald won by 21 points in 2016 is a win. This wasn't supposed to be a tough district for the GOP.
But it was.
And the GOP poured money into the district. Mike Noble, a GOP pollster based in Arizona, said, quote, "Republicans shouldn't be hitting the alarm. They should be slamming it," unquote.
That's right.
I think he said that to Politico. I don't remember where I pulled the quote from. But hey, guys, this is not a time to get complacent. Things are still tight, and not everyone is winning.
Obviously.
We just lost one. It is still a big ol' uphill slog to take back control of this government come November, blue wave or not. And get this. In Maricopa County, which is one of the more Democratic counties in Arizona, the Republicans cheated.
They cheated.
And yeah, and they called it a hiccup. A freaking hiccup. Roughly 140,000 voters may have been unaware that they were eligible to vote because they never received their damn voter ID cards. See, the county is required to send them out after they register. And according to the Arizona Republic, Maricopa County officials had not sent all the voters the cards that they're supposed to use to cast a ballot under Arizona's racist voter ID law. The paper reports that 60,000 ID cards had not been mailed to people who recently registered or changed their registration, while 140,000 were just never sent. Some hiccup, huh, guys? And yeah, people were still allowed to use other forms of ID at the polling place, but how many people knew that they could do that? You know, if Republicans could get better policies, then they wouldn't have to cheat so damn much to win elections. And no, I don't know if they cheated. Maybe this was an honest mistake. I'll give them that. But I think we know, don't we? So reporter Michelle Goldberg, who's awesome, wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times called "Hope in Arizona, How Activist Women Are Changing the State's Politics." See, on Thursday, public school teachers in Arizona, which is another one of their states with the lowest paid, are planning to walk out, following the lead of teachers in West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Kentucky. Goldberg writes, quote, "Both the walkout and the surprising viability of Tepurny's campaign are manifestations of the explosive activist energy, particularly among women, set off by the catastrophe of Trump's election," unquote. The historian Laura Putnam and the political scientist Theda Schopfel wrote in a recent article called "Middle America Reboots Democracy" that since Hillary Clinton's defeat, quote, "college-educated women have ramped up their political participation en masse. It's this civic renewal that is transforming politics in Arizona," unquote. There's this chapter of Indivisible there, you know, that nationwide resistance organization that is focused on recruiting and training Democratic precinct committeemen, the people who link their neighborhoods to the party. I cannot express to you enough how a precinct committeeman is arguably the most powerful person in politics. And any one of us can be one. We just have to do the work to become one. Did this in one of my very first episodes. I discussed all of this. Maybe I'll rehash all of that at some point. Anyways, get this. In Maricopa County, before the election, Republicans had more than 3,000 precinct committeemen in the county, and Democrats only had 600. And since 2016, Democrats have grown to 1,700. That is huge. And this kind of thing is happening across America. There is hope for this country yet, guys. Hope for Republicans, however, not so much. The desperate Arizona GOP was up to shenanigans, and they were blocked from changing the rules on filling John McCain's Senate seat, who has been sick with brain cancer. So the AP reported that Arizona State Democrats on Monday blocked a measure that would have changed how the state fills vacant Senate seats. GOP lawmakers had introduced a measure that would have allowed individuals appointed to open Senate seats to hold them for 2 full years if the seat became vacant within 150 days of a regularly scheduled primary election. That would have meant that anyone appointed by Governor Doug Ducey, Republican, of course, after March 31st, which had already passed, would remain in the seat until 2020.
Over my dead body!
Republicans had been going to try to attach the emergency clause to another piece of legislation, but Democrats collectively voted against the proposal. Current Arizona law states that McCain's seat would have to be on the next general election ballot if he leaves the post by May 30th. But hey, at least we have them running scared, guys. You vote, don't you? Tell me your vote. No, seriously, just lie. Tell me that you do, even if you don't. So I don't smack you upside the head. Lots of people, even people who pay attention to politics, don't vote. Voter turnout in the 2016 presidential election hit an all-time high at 58%.
58%? That's ridiculous!
Which means that tens of millions of eligible voters decided people don't deserve healthcare, black people don't deserve to live, and the future of the world doesn't need to happen. Okay, yeah, maybe I'm being dramatic, but in a way, I'm totally not. A new survey conducted by Suffolk University and USA Today polled citizens across all regions of the county. And here are some of its findings. Who doesn't vote? Age-wise, the respondents were pretty evenly split, but folks from 18 to 34 were the highest at 29%. Caucasians were significantly less likely to vote at 60%. Because, you know, those with privilege can afford to not fight for a better future, or for others. 56% said that they think the country is on the wrong track. The economy and the political gridlock are listed as the biggest problems facing the country by respondents. So what? They choose not to vote and change the system? Do they think things will just get better by doing nothing? Gee, I'm really hungry. It's making me lightheaded. You know what'll solve the problem? Not eating. It doesn't work that way, guys. For those not registered to vote, the primary reasons for not voting were apathy and believing that voting doesn't make a difference. And for those registered, the primary reasons for not voting were lack of information on the candidates and issues and believing that voting doesn't make a difference. The good news is, for those registered, the highest percentage of respondents said that they will vote in the 2018 midterms. So there's that. 30% of respondents said that a third party is necessary to properly represent Americans' political views, which may be right, but not voting doesn't get us there. And 36% described themselves as politically moderate. The vast majority of respondents, 83 to 86%, both liberals and conservatives, said that if they knew their vote could help swing an election, they would vote. And how many of those didn't vote in states that mattered in 2016, which resulted in swinging in the most powerful democracy in the world to a damn fascist and a moron? Okay, so you know how conservatives love them some Jesus, and they hate themselves some abortion? And you know how to prevent abortions, we need to prevent pregnancies from happening to begin with. And you also know how Republicans don't believe in that women should have contraception or that kids should be taught sex education or anything else that would prevent the pregnancies, that would prevent the abortion, that would prevent their little conservative heads from exploding? Wow. We had a win in the courts last Thursday. See, last summer, this cow pie of an administration notified 81 organizations in the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program at HHS that their 5-year grants through the program would end in 2018 rather than in 2020, which prompted multiple lawsuits. The administration abruptly cut the grants off last year, arguing that the programs were ineffective at curbing teen pregnancy, which, coming from the anti-science conservatives, means bunk. The program was created in 2010 under Obama and funds organizations working to reduce and prevent teen pregnancy with a focus on reaching populations with the greatest need, and to great success. Conservatives hate it because the program educates about the icky sex stuff, as well as abstinence. While the conservatives, who live in a fairy tale world, believe that if you tell kids that sex is bad, okay, then they won't have it. But this comes from the people who think that Jesus played fetch with dinosaurs.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Go get it! Good boy.
Praise Jesus!
Well, the good news is that last Thursday, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson ruled in one of those cases ordering the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, to accept and process applications for grantees if they had not been terminated.
Na 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 boo boo, stick your head in doo doo.
Several other lawsuits are still playing out.
Net neutrality is officially dead. As of Monday, April 23rd, net neutrality slipped from this earthly plane. Net neutrality is dead.
The GOP-led Federal Communications Commission has successfully rolled back net neutrality regulations. And we are all the losers for it. Internet service providers can now legally speed up and slow down access to apps and websites, and then charge you for the pleasure. So, what's next for Congress? Under the Congressional Review Act, CRA, Congress can nullify recently passed legislation with a simple majority. Half of the Senate, 49 Democrats and independents with one Republican, have signed on to Ed Markey's, Democrat of Massachusetts, CRA, that would undo the FCC's repeal of net neutrality. The rest of the Republicans don't believe in regulation, unless it's large companies doing the regulating.
And generally screwing people over.
Markey published a call to action in a series of tweets on the weekend, which provides our call to action today.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to actions.
Call to action.
Markey tweeted, quote, "With hashtag one more vote in the Senate, we can vote to reverse at real Donald Trump's attack on the internet. The House can do the same with 218 votes. It currently has 160, but we won't get those votes unless lawmakers hear from people who care about protecting the future of the internet. Momentum is on our side, but time isn't. Help us to hashtag save the internet by making your voices heard now. Members of Congress need to know that there will be a price to pay for being on the wrong side of internet history." Unquote. Meanwhile, a number of senators signed a petition to force the vote on reversing the FCC's repeal. Various states are considering or have already passed legislation to protect net neutrality. So call your senator now. You can call the switchboard at 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. All right, guys, get a load of this headline from Vox. Colorado Republican lawmakers want to punish striking teachers with jail time.
Excuse me, what?
Republicans introduced in their state Senate on Friday a bill that prohibits districts from supporting a teacher strike and requires schools to dock teachers' pay for each day they participate in a walkout. The teachers could also face up to 6 months in jail and add a $500 daily fine if they violate a court order to stop striking. They seriously went to jail teachers for striking for a living wage. Look, I dated a full-time teacher. They work hard. They never have free time. Trust me, it was a problem in the relationship. Sure, they do have a free period, which they work through, and they have to handle kids through. They get home late after grading papers and making tests, only to prep the lesson plan for the next day. And then they fall in bed exhausted, or they fall asleep in the couple of hours they actually have at the end of the day to spend with their loved one, their family, or hell, themselves. And then it's up at 6 a.m. again. Under this new law, sponsored by State Senator Bob Gardner, Republican, of course, and State Representative Paul Lundeen, Republican. A teacher could be immediately fired without a hearing. Colorado teachers are among the lowest paid in the country. They earned an average of $46,155 in 2016. That puts Colorado 46th in average teacher pay among the National Education Association. The state also spends about $2,500 less per student each year than the national average. Because, you know,
who needs educated kids anyway? We have rich people to give tax breaks to.
Teachers are planning to walk out of class on April 27th to protest low teacher pay and school spending. Several school districts, including Denver schools, have announced that they will close that day. As for this legislation, the good news is the chance of it passing is slim to none. As long as Democrats don't jump on. And if they do, they're not Democrats. Republicans have control of the Senate, but Democrats control the House and the governor's mansion, so haha. Alright, before I go, some good news.
We call BS!
Friday, April 20th saw massive demonstrations all around the nation from students demanding substantive action from elective officials on the epidemic of gun violence. Just over 2 months after the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, it was also the 19th anniversary of the Columbine school shooting. Teenagers today have grown up in a world where these frightening episodes are the norm, and they are fed up with the inaction from Republicans and state and federal government. Gracie Shirley, a 17-year-old from Utah, told the New York Times, quote, "We are the school shooting generation," unquote. And a 14-year-old Maryland student, Marissa Araman, said, when she's in school, quote, "I'm not learning my subjects. I'm learning how to literally survive," unquote. It is sad, but these kids are making their voices heard, and many of them will do so at the ballot box in November. Also, there is a blue Muslim wave coming in November. According to the WAPO, Muslim Americans are ready to deliver some sweet, sweet justice to Trump. With their unprecedented foray into the political sphere, more than 90 American Muslims, nearly all of them Democrats, are running for public office across the country this year. Currently, there are only two Muslim Americans serving in Congress. Michigan State Legislator Abdullah Hammond thinks that this is likely to change, and that Trump's election and presidency, quote, lit a fire under young Muslims. They see their rights as being stripped away day in and day out, unquote. And as more Muslim candidates run for office and put themselves out there in front of the nation, even more of them will feel comfortable joining their ranks. Fayez Nawabi, who's running for San Diego City Council, said, quote, "When you put someone in the corner and they're in survival mode, they have a tendency to come out and speak more prominently about their beliefs," unquote. Sing it. All right, guys. Thank you for sticking with me and this episode of K, Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download this show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at KellyTheVoice and on Facebook, where you'll find all of the stories I've discussed in this show and more at K, Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with hosts Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Pfeiffer. 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, guys. Take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Take us a resistance!
We've come a distance. We made some progress. But there are forces in America today that want to take us back. And we're not going back, we're going forward. We're going forward. So I've said many times to the young people back in Georgia and around America that when you see something that is not right, not fair, not just, you have to stand up, speak up, speak out, and get in trouble. Good trouble, necessary trouble. That's why we need to restore the vote.